Get the Hillman Morning Show on demand. Podcasts and more are always online and on your schedule at WAAF.com.
They simply did not have, don't have, the capacity operationally to do the work that they're required to do. And we didn't want them out there doing work with people who weren't qualified.
I think the Columbia gas hearings are over.
There's going to be one more. But,
okay. Are it's been a nightmare for those people. And you've been saying this since this started. Are you comfortable with that company and what they've done? I mean, I think they announced yesterday 70% of the work is done. They have
it's more like 97%, 98%.
Okay.
There's less than 200 families that aren't back home, and almost all of them are people who chose to pursue a route other than the one that was made available through Columbia to get their stuff turned back on. I would say the following. First of all, the nightmare began with a whole series of terrible explosions, which must have freaked everybody out all the way through that 45-mile collection of communities there. And the lieutenant governor and I and folks on our team, along with the local officials and others, have been up there a lot over the course of the last 90 days. And over the course of the real repair work started around the 1st or 2nd of October. They've taken out 20,000 appliances, boilers, hot water heaters, dryers, put in about 18,000 new ones, 10,000 dwellings, almost 8,500 meters have been relit. And I think at this point, the big challenge is making sure that all the work associated with the streets gets done at some point when the weather gets nice. Remember, they replaced 45 miles of pipe, main street pipe. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done to clean up those streets. And the service line connections into the houses, all those front lawns that got torn up to do that work. And they also have to go back and replace a bunch of the boilers they repaired in the spring. And there are also a whole series of claim issues that are still outstanding for individuals and businesses and all the rest. So there's still a ton of work left to do, but for the most part, everybody at this point does have heat and hot water. And I think the most important thing from our point of view here is the National Transportation Safety Board did a report, sort of a preliminary report, and said there were a couple things that needed to be changed with respect to Massachusetts state law. We filed those things like the day after the report came out. It's currently pending with the legislature. I really hope they pass it because it's important in the context of ensuring that the work that gets done going forward is done safely. And the other thing, we do have an independent investigation of pipeline safety in Massachusetts currently going on that's being done by a Canadian company that's done this work in other parts of the North America when there have been issues around pipeline safety. And that report will be done, I think, February or March-ish. And I'm hoping we get some recommendations from them about things we need to do to ensure the system's safe going forward.
Governor Baker is here. It's Breakfast with Baker. And this is Chris on the Framingham Ford studio line. Hey, Chris, you're on with the governor.
Hey, what's going on, Governor?
Big morning, Chris.
I think you're doing a great job. Hey, I always had this idea that may work, see if you're all for it, for making traffic better in the state, seeing how good it isn't. And it's putting up a 10-foot wall down most of the thoroughways that allow people to come to a stop on the other side for something that has nothing to do with them. An accident.
Yeah, I mean, like, so in order to stop the looky-loos,
right,
you put up a wall that people can't see through. I mean, I feel like, on the national level, we're discussing
Chris, right?
Yeah, Chris.
Chris, I got to tell you, that is without question the most creative approach to dealing with traffic I think I've ever heard in my life. He's got a point there.
He does, I mean, probably cost
the
significant amount.
The technology on that one might be kind of interesting. How long would that particular screen, wall, whatever you want to call it, have to be.
Maybe we could make it like a hologram, and it could display, because of the weather that we deal with here at this time of year, it could display like a summer scene
a
from like a beach,
water.
Like from Florida.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
What do you think about that?
Waves crashing against the shore.
Let's see. Here's a 617 text, Governor. Please ask when the new Orange Line cars will be running and why the service is so particularly bad on the Orange Line. I don't know if that, I have ridden the T before. I'm not a regular.
No, the Orange Line and the Red Line cars are the oldest cars on the system. And, they date back literally pre-1976 Blizzard. Okay. And, the new Orange Line cars are going to start arriving shortly. I don't want to put a particular date on it, but it's certainly within the next few weeks. And they will come in sets. They're already here, but they're being tested right now. And they'll start landing in sets of four. And as those sets of four land, one of the things that will happen is they won't replace one for one the existing trains as they start to come in, because one of the big challenges the system has on the Orange Line is creating enough capacity during rush hour in the morning and in the evening to get everybody who wants to ride it through. So one of the things we'll be doing is adding capacity to the rush hour by bringing the new trains on and taking fewer trains off, so that we'll be able to run more trains, more cars during rush hour on both directions. And then over the course of the year, we will continue to add trains, and then we'll start taking trains out of service as... When I say trains, I mean older trains, as we continue to add the new ones. But in the end, we'll end up with more cars running during rush hour on the Orange Line and on the Red Line, by the way, where cars are also going to start to land there, than we have running now. Because the single biggest challenge we have during the commutes is the fact that there just aren't enough trains. The second thing we've done is we just let very big contracts, hundreds of millions of dollars, to upgrade all the signal and switch technology on the Orange Line and the Red Line. And no one talks much about this, but the simple truth is that technology is really old, like more than 50 years in many cases. And many of the delays and many of the issues around reliability are because of signal problems. And when this stuff gets replaced, it will dramatically improve the performance of the system overall.
And departure over there at the top,
yep.
Was that just not working?
Luis did a really good job on what I would describe as a whole series of issues around procurement and contracting. The thing we really need to deliver on is we have isolated $8 billion to spend on the infrastructure of the T, okay? The stuff like the new Orange and Red Line cars, the signal and switch technology, power systems, tracks, electronics, the Green Line extension into Somerville, all this stuff that's fundamental to the system's ability to perform and hasn't been done for years. I mean, I say all the time that whenever anything breaks on the T, it's always at least 50 years old.
Yeah.
And that lack of investment in the system over time is a huge part of the reason why it doesn't deliver the kind of reliable service that it should. And we now have a situation where we have the money and it's been identified, and we better execute on implementing it. And this is something that Steve Poftak, who has been on the Fiscal Management Control Board and has been writing about and studying the MBTA for a long time, is every bit the mad dog about that I am. I really want to see that happen over the course of the next 4 years.
So you're comfortable.
Gotta happen.
It has to happen, and you're comfortable this is the direction to go in to make sure that it happens. Let's see. This is Jim on the Framingham Ford Studio line with the governor. Hey, Jim.
How's it going? How's it going, Governor?
Morning, Jim.
So I just had a question about the dispensaries. So I understand a couple more are going to be opening pretty soon, right?
There's one opening up in Salem, I think, this weekend.
Okay, so do they plan on rolling out more dispensaries quicker as time goes on? I know that there's a lot of traffic problems in the two places they're in right now. Just kind of wondering if that'll expand a little more.
You know, the Cannabis Control Commission, which was set up under the legislation, is a freestanding independent entity. Some of the people on it are appointed by our office, but they are basically the ones driving the train here. My understanding is they needed to put in place a number of oversight elements before they could start signing on dispensary licenses. And it is my understanding that these are going to start to happen a lot more quickly. The other big issue that doesn't have anything to do with the commission or with state government is getting approval at the local level to get the permits associated with being able to open at all.
And
again, it's my understanding that a lot of folks, after a long process, are starting to land, and that there will be many more dispensaries opening over the course of the next 5 or 6 months.
Now
Boston is actually going to start opening dispensaries as well.
Now that...
Can I say one more thing about this?
Yeah, of course. It's your show.
I was in Western Mass for a few days earlier this week, and one of the things I heard from a bunch of folks I talked to out there was the number of out-of-state plates that were part of the crowds at the two sites that are open in Western Mass. And I think one of the things that we will discover as this rolls forward, at least until some of the surrounding states decide what they're going to do, is we're going to have a lot of folks coming into Massachusetts to purchase product at Massachusetts dispensaries.
And is that a good thing, in your opinion?
It's just an interesting... I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
When people were talking
it's like
about
it. So you're saying we could create a whole pot tourism industry.
Well, the question becomes what Connecticut...
You can't take it back with
it. It depends a lot on what Connecticut, Rhode Island, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont choose to do.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it certainly seems to me that in the short term...
I mean, the tax revenue is going to be... It seems like it's going to be extraordinary. I mean, I
don't know. Off the top of my head, I don't know what the number is for next year. I think for this year, it's like 50 or 60 million.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is for next year.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as far as out-of-state people, I don't know about you, Governor. Sometimes I go to New Hampshire
to buy liquor.
To buy liquor.
The governor doesn't go to New Hampshire to buy his liquor.
Well, I'm just admitting it in front of the guy.
I shop local.
I know. That's why I said
local.
I don't know about you.
He shops local.
You know, regardless if they're from out of state, they're spending their money here.
Yeah.
Massachusetts.
That's more my point.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Easy there, Tigger.
A lot of people worked really hard for this.
Maybe you should hit that joint.
How many tree lightings did you do this holiday season? Honorary tree lightings.
I did several tree lightings. I did several menorah lightings, and I did several nativity scenes. So, look, this whole part of the year is supposed to be about faith and family and friends and community, and it's a chance for everybody to count their blessings. And I know that sounds corny, but when you think about the folks in Lawrence and North Andover and Andover and what they've gone through, for them, just being in a warm home with hot water and a stove that works is going to be quite a blessing for the holiday and something that will probably feel a little different than it might have prior to all the terrible stuff that happened in September. And I'll tell you something else. For the Roy family, who have suffered just a staggering loss in the death of Christopher Roy and his daughter Ava and his parents, you know, they are a real reminder about the fact that not everything goes quite the way people hope it's going to go. And people really should count their blessings at this time of year.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, it's heartbreaking, and it's going to be a tough weekend for that Worcester Fire Department and his friends and family. And
The wake is on Friday, and the service is on Saturday. And I'm sure there will be people from the fire service from all over the country who will come to show their support. But boy, you and I were talking about this earlier. The month of December has been brutal to the Worcester Fire Department. This is the third tragedy in less than 20 years, and they've lost seven or eight firefighters over that period of time.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Is that a hard part of this job? Is when you go and meet those families? And
I mean, I've talked to his mom and dad last weekend, and it's brutal. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. Parents, and I've talked to moms and dads of service men and women who've been killed in the line of duty. I've talked to husbands and wives of law enforcement officials and others who've been killed in the line of duty, and everybody who is part of a family where somebody serves in the fire service, is a police officer, a state trooper, or serves in the military in dangerous places, knows this is a possibility and part of the job. But you just hope and pray it's never part of your job. And, so I think we should all keep that in mind as we head into the holidays.
Well, and
by the way, kudos to your listening audience for once again really stepping up in a big way yesterday.
Oh, they've donated so far $38,000 to the foundation, and that number will continue to go up. And we do.
But they do this every single time.
Every single time. Yes.
Every time.
Yes, every single time. All right. Well, Governor Baker here. And I was going to ask you if there was any particular Baker family holiday tradition that happens every year.
Our biggest tradition is basically we don't do much. I mean, we get up on Christmas morning, and our son Charlie actually is a very good cook, and he usually puts all the breakfast stuff together, and we just throw Christmas music up and spend the day literally in our pajamas, and no one usually goes anywhere. And this year, the interesting thing is, this is what we've been doing literally for 25 years. And because Charlie got engaged, he's going to be spending his first Christmas away from home.
Oh, no.
At his future in-laws' house.
I'm dreading that. So, I'm dreading that when the kids get old. Yeah. They have to pick between families.
Can't do it this year, Dad. Sorry.
What's your...
He even held up his hands.
I'm dreading it. I don't want to tell you. Do you have a favorite Christmas film?
Oh, I'm a Christmas Story guy.
Yeah. Oh, you are? Okay, yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, no.
The Scott Farkas affair.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes.
That's right.
Yes. All right.
Schwartz!
Well,
Schwartz. There are so many great lines in that movie.
Oh, sure.
Speaking of the foundation, do we have an agreement on my text message that I sent you about a fundraiser for the foundation with the
new phone?
With the Dropkicks?
I've never met. I've heard of this guy, Greg Hill.
I've never
met him.
Do you remember?
I'm looking, Greg.
I was texting you about how much money we could raise for the foundation. If you would be willing to go to, we'll do a quick little dinner or something, and then go to a Dropkick show with the listeners.
I'm happy. Yes, you're right. There is a text here.
It says delivered, Governor. I know you got
it. Here's my excuse. The text is actually on my birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, and on my birthday, I wasn't paying attention to much of anything.
in his head.
But I will, be loved to. That'd be great.
Okay.
That'd be fun.
All right, good. All right, we'll try to set it up. We'll set it up with your people. Yeah.
My people talk to your people.
Oh, yeah, have your people talk to my people.
You have
people, all right.
Greg? That's awesome.
Well, I don't. All right, well.
It's monkey.
Best wishes to you and the family for
a
great holiday season. It's been awesome having you part of the show.
I'm really glad I won't be doing this next year. glad to have this off. Glad to have this off the radar.
Wait a
second.
What are you talking about? You committed to it. You committed to it. You can't go anywhere.
I'm kidding.
Hey, listen. Will you? I need you to endorse a no tax pledge this morning on the show. We were talking earlier about California. They're going to attempt to tax text messages.
Without question, one of the goofiest ideas I've ever heard in my life.
Okay.
Seriously.
Right. Okay.
But we are in the process of trying to level the playing field between hotels and motels and Airbnb, which would create a tax on Airbnb. It'd be the same tax that are paid by hotels and motels.
I think that's fair.
Which I have no problem with at all.
But no new tax.
Well, that is a new tax. That's
But I mean on text messages.
Oh my God,
No. Okay, all right, good. I want you to.
No.
No.
That would cost me everything I make every year and then some.
And is the Baker family on Team Real Tree or Team Fake Tree?
Ooh.
It depends upon the year and people's schedules, but we have been on Real Tree and Fake Tree over the years.
Perfect answer for a politician.
No, but it's true.
Yes, it's true. Yes,
I mean,
yeah.
Some of this comes down to time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I do believe that this year we will be Team Realtree.
Team Realtree. All right, good. You and I are on the same team. All right, Governor. Great to see you.
You too.
Take care, guys. Thanks for
everything.
Merry
Christmas.
Okay, thanks for everything. That is Governor Baker and Breakfast with Baker. It is 8:18 and time for this.
And now, it's your turn to talk as the Hillman Morning Show presents Hill Mail.
Mike Hill, too bad the candy cane didn't look like a J from the weed store.
On WAAF.
All right, it is 8:18 and pretty good Breakfast with Baker segment.
Yeah. He's the best,
absolutely,
man.
Absolutely.
There were some hard balls. I didn't deliver any.
Yeah, thank you to the texters and the callers. Yeah,
but the texters delivered some hard balls. Time now for do you think he was kidding when he said he was done, or do you think he'll be here next year?
I think he'll come back.
I think he'll be back. I mean, he made a promise. He's got to come back.
Do you want to run down the hall and grab him real quick? You can play Hill Mail while you're out. It's like, hey, Charlie. You're coming back, right?
You're kidding, right?
Right.
All right. It is time now for the very best Hill Mail voicemail messages that you have left for us over the previous 24 hours.
Wednesday, 7:13 a.m.
I'm going to order 4 orders of those crack fries. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to watch Charlie Brown. Then I'm going to watch Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Then I'm going to stand out on the front porch and I'm going to say, baby, it's cold outside. And trust me, I can't sing. Merry Christmas, everybody.
End of message.
Well, we discussed yesterday a restaurant has given in and changed the name of one of their most popular entrees or sides. They were called crack fries because they were essentially like crack. You had to have the fries.
Yeah.
They're beer battered French fries
with a special seasoning.
And so there were some who were offended, or perhaps, like in most of these cases, one who was offended.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they immediately went into the fetal position and changed the name.
I have another idea for a name for those if they want to change it. How about cholesterol sticks?
That's a good idea.
Is that good?
Yeah.
Kind of family friendly?
7:21 a.m.
Hey, that Sonic story about the ecstasy in the hamburger. That's why everyone's been raving about their burgers.
End of message.
Good pun. I get it.
Wednesday, 7:31 a.m.
Water country, bump, bump, there's a turd in the wave pool.
End of message.
That's not how the jingle goes. Well, you heard the jingle yesterday. That's not how it goes.
Wednesday, 7:32 a.m.
Lyndon Byers, you're so dumb.
End of message.
Well done, sir. Well done. Oh. I would have not thought of that.
That's good.
Wednesday, 7:55 a.m.
We wish you an LB Christmas. We wish you an LB Christmas. We wish you an LB Christmas. And I have a bad knee. I played for the Bruins. I played on the D. And that is the reason for my bad knee. I skated on the ice. I couldn't keep up. That is because I'm a fat.
End of message.
Oh, guy's right over here.
Yeah. Creativity is outstanding this morning.
Yeah, we're on vacation, kid. It's cool.
Absolutely.
Wednesday, 9:15 p.m.
Let's see here. Maybe I can pick up some extra work around the holidays. Here's something. Wanted. White House Chief of Staff. No experience necessary. Hours flexible. Also should be very flexible, as you will be nodding your head a lot. Also, must be willing to accept varied and alternate versions of the truth. Huh. I wonder what that means. Apply 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Ask for Kellyanne.
End of message.
That was well done.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
That was great.
Hours flexible.
That was great.
5:20 a.m.
Yeah, Mike, too. Meatloaf cold is way better on a sandwich, especially after it's your bong hit.
End of message.
That is for sure.
Stating the obvious.
I'll tell you what, if a meatloaf sandwich is done in the right way, it's perfect.
It's sublime.
It is sublime. Mm. Yeah. Yes. And you have to have the thick Italian bread.
Not toasted, though.
No.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to risk doing damage to the roof of your mouth.
Right.
Nothing is worse than getting a BLT on toasted bread and they've over toasted it, and it's you start ripping up the roof.
Yeah, I get it.
Actually, Greg, there aren't things worse than that. But I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Nope. Nothing in my world. Nothing is worse than that. Nothing.
5:45 a.m.
Good morning, listeners. Today's show is brought to you by the number 0. 0, the exact number of potheads that will be on time to their appointment in Salem this weekend.
End of message.
Now, that place, you have to make an appointment.
Right.
Yes.
Which is smart, I think.
Because of the parking situation. Yeah.
It's mostly like a residential area over there, so it's tight with traffic.
Do you use Open Table, or how does that go? How do you book that?
Open Rolling Tray, I think that's called.
Yeah.
6:07 a.m.
Has anybody ever bothered to ask Can Man if he's related to Elmer Fudd? Next time he comes on the show, have him say Rascally Rabbit and see how it comes out.
End of message.
I think he said that he was going to try to come tomorrow morning to Bach Maserati in the elf costume that he was wearing last year.
Yes.
So, I'll tell you the worst news of the day on the show is that Scott from Weymouth said he's coming to the live broadcast tomorrow morning.
What are the chances that's actually going to happen, though?
Well, he doesn't have anything else to do.
Right,
does he have a car?
I don't think he has to be at work. I mean, I don't think the guy works. All he does is call radio stations.
More importantly, will he bring a toy? You have to have a toy, Scott.
I got
to
tell you this. Yeah, tomorrow is our annual Toys for Tots show. We do it every year with the Marines and with Santa Bach. And we will be at Bach Maserati. You get free breakfast, and you could win a Christmas gift from Santa Bach. And the gift options always include cash.
Cha-ching.
And also, I think tomorrow he is going to give at least one of you the opportunity to go to the benefit he's doing for his foundation and see Stone Temple Pilots play live at an intimate venue tomorrow night. So, but if you, real quick on the text line or on the phone, I'd like your this will be like the police sketch artist.
Oh,
yeah.
I'd like your guess at what Scott from Weymouth looks like.
Mm.
Okay, now, would you consider, do you think that he is a tall individual, or do you think he's a Napoleon a complex kind of short guy?
I think tall and lanky.
You think tall and lanky?
Yeah, that's how I envision him, and kind of douchey looking in the face.
LB?
I'm just excited to meet him because he loves me.
Yes. Shu, what do you think?
I'm thinking Marty Feldman type. You remember that character?
Yes.
With the gigantic eyes.
Yes.
He was in Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Do you think he has,
Abby Normal?
Yes, Abby Normal. Yes.
Do you think he has any kind of a physical deformity or anything like
that?
Yeah,
his brain.
Oh, it's an invisible one.
Here's somebody who believes they look like Newman. Scott is going to look like Newman.
I can see that. Absolutely.
Here's somebody who says short and fat, guaranteed.
If he's short and fat, it's going to, like, throw off my whole perception. Nah, it's going to be so weird.
Don't overthink it.
Right.
5'11", 175 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be like when I was at Seaport Strong, Greg, and I saw Rose Savage. And I was like, I think that's Rose Savage. And then I said...
Did you think he looked like...
He looked kind of like how I expected him to look.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then... I expected him to be like a bigger guy because he has a deep voice. But he's not a big guy. He's not like fat at all.
Yeah.
But I was like, are you Chris? And he was like, nope. And I was like, oh, okay. Just kidding. He's like, I am. I'll talk to you later. I was like, oh, that's
oh my.
Smooth.
Oh, yeah. Guy's got skills.
He negged you in a social setting. He was negging you in a social setting. All right, well, we'll see. It is possible that Scott from Weymouth, the most annoying and hated radio caller in the history since Marconi. since Marconi said to somebody, run over into the other cave and get on the rotary phone and call in on my radio show. Scott has been he's the most, in the history of radio, he's the most annoying, and he'll be there, I guess, tomorrow. Coming up next, I am very excited because the actor David Morse will join us. And as the governor pointed out, he was a corrections officer in the Green Mile. Now, I don't know if he's worried about being typecast or not, but he's playing a corrections officer in my new favorite television program, which is Escape at Dannemora on Showtime. He is going to join us next. I am so very excited to have our next guest on the show. He stars in what may be my new favorite television program. But don't forget, I watch an awful lot of television.
Yes.
However,
yes.
He is in Escape at Dannemora on Showtime, and David Morse is his name. And David, thanks for joining us on the Framingham Ford studio line. How are you?
I'm grand. How are you?
Well, we're fantastic, and I learned in doing a little research that you are a North Shore guy, born and raised, what, Essex, Hamilton, up in that area?
Yeah, born in Beverly and lived in Danvers, Essex, and Hamilton. Yep.
Do you miss the mass holes in your life? Are you? I mean, now you're hanging out with Hollywood people all the time. Do you miss us back here?
I still have people up there that in my family and people that I love, and I actually lived in the city of Boston for about 6 years too. I did theater there for 6 years, so I'm a big Boston guy.
We were just talking about how you oftentimes play a law enforcement person or a corrections officer. In this case, is that something that you seek those roles out, or does it just happen that way?
I think it just happens that way. I don't know. There's a lot of things that get done that involve law enforcement. You're either the bad guy or the cop, and I've been on both sides. So I'm just happy to get work on either side I'm playing on.
Yeah. Well, I'm fascinated by Escape at Dannemora, and because it's based on a true story. And we talked a lot about it on the show at the time when it happened. These two guys broke out of a prison in upstate New York, and they had the cooperation of a woman who worked there. And I'm wondering how, because I'm sure you researched this, and I don't know if maybe you spoke to the corrections officer that you play, but how true to what really happened is Escape at Dannemora?
Well, I give Ben Stiller a lot of credit for this. Ben Stiller directed all of the episodes. This he was one of the producers and very involved with the writing of it. When the guys who wrote it, who were great writers, they originally came to him with the project and gave him some of the original scripts they were working on. They had actually kind of baloneyed up the scripts a little bit with Hollywood stuff. And when Ben read it, he just smelled it out and said, "Listen, if we're going to tell it, we're going to tell what happened. What happened is way more interesting than anything you're going to invent. So just stick to the truth here, and we're going to have a great story." And I think it just is brilliant that he did that, because I think it's part of what makes it so fascinating is you can't believe that this is really what happened when you watch the story unfold.
I was surprised to see that Ben Stiller directed it. How is he as a director?
I thought he was amazing as a director. You know, I think I'm like probably like you and most people. We knew him from his comedy.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he had directed, obviously, a little bit on his television show a long time ago, and some of his movies. But to direct something like this, one being a drama, and I've done a lot of dramatic television, and he had never done it. And the idea that one person was going to direct all 8 episodes of this story, and it, occasionally it's done, but almost never, was just a Herculean kind of task to take on. And he was fantastic. You know, it is, I really think it is about the toughest job in the business, and he pulled it off beautifully.
David Morse is our guest. You know him from Green Mile, The Rock, and now
Kurt
he's
Walker.
Now he's on Escape at Dannemora. I think a big part of what I enjoy about the show is the soundtrack, and there's some amazing use of songs in this.
I love the soundtrack. I didn't get to see this until it was on the air. I didn't see any of it. So, you know, just like you, I get to enjoy that. There is so much about this thing, including the soundtrack, that's great. You know, the photography is beautiful. You can't beat the actors in this. Benicio and Patricia Arquette, who just got nominated for a Golden Globe, and Paul Dano. It's pretty remarkable.
We were talking about Patricia Arquette earlier and the extraordinary transformation from what she is to playing this woman Tilly. Have you guys had the opportunity to meet Tilly or to meet anybody that is a part of this real life story?
I don't think she met Tilly. I tried to meet the guy I'm playing. I asked several times how he felt about getting together, and I really wanted to do it really out of respect for him. It's, you know, he got sentenced to a year in jail for what he did, and spent 6 months in there, and you know, his family, his life was affected by this, and just out of respect, I wanted to, you know, do that. And the only person who got to was Paul Dano, and the character he plays, they got to spend some time with. And of course, he, you know, he says he isn't the bad guy that everybody thinks he is. And
right, they all do, though.
Yeah,
right?
I know.
yeah. Well, it's so well written, and it's. I enjoy things that are based on true stories. It's really, and it's an incredible story. I mean, these two guys basically convinced this. I don't know. Would you call her? We were talking earlier about the character of Tilly's husband and whether you feel sorry for him or not. Do you consider the woman that Patricia Arquette plays to be a victim, or she? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. How do you feel about that, David?
You know, he's, if you could feel sorry for anybody in this story, it's probably him.
Yeah.
These people are, it's very hard for corrections officers to look at this story and not get angry. You know, the people, the guy I played that what Tilly did, it's bad. You know, there's no way around it. It's bad. From their point of view, you know, there's a lot of them who feel like they're living in this world or system where, you know, they're trying to survive in it, just like everybody else is trying to survive, and people on the outside just don't understand the kind of the stress that they're under and what it takes to keep that world under control and to live to the next day. You know, it's a tough job. So they have their own point of view about that world, and it was for her to do it, for Patty to do it, and for me to do it. We kind of have to take that point of view to do these characters.
A texter is upset that I haven't mentioned Saint elsewhere yet, and we've had you on.
Yeah.
It's 8:46. We've had you on for 10 minutes. So
really,
seriously.
Well, nice to be back.
Well, certainly that was like the, you know, you're either. It depends on how old you are, but you're either a Saint Elsewhere person or a Grey's Anatomy person, I think.
Yes, good call. Good call. Right, right.
But I think Saint Elsewhere was. Saint Elsewhere and Hill Street Blues really changed television, I think, in a lot of ways. And there are a lot of the writers who were on those shows went on to do shows like Grey's Anatomy or ER. And it was a remarkable show.
And you were fantastic as George Washington in the John Adams.
Thanks.
Yes. Right, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, that was, you know, that's another one of those amazing series. You know, that John Adams with Paul Giamatti and Laura Linney. That's another thing. No matter where you looked at that, there was just brilliant work being done, and it was just great company to be in, just like this one.
Did you guys film Escape at the Anamora in upstate New York, or was that filmed elsewhere?
Well, this is what I think. I'm going to give Governor Cuomo a lot of credit for this, because it was such an embarrassment for the correctional system. And there had never been an escape from this Clinton correctional in 146 years. He knew this was getting done, and it was going to get done with or without the state. And I think he wanted to make sure it got done the right way. Mm. And he allowed us to get into the prison itself, which is one of the most fascinating places I've ever been. I've been in a lot of prisons, and there's nothing like this place. And he let us shoot in parts of the prison there, the big yard that a lot of the action takes place. And so we did shoot up in there. We shot in that area around there. And we got to spend a lot of time with the, you know, with the real people who were there when this all happened. So we got to talk to them about everything. And that's always, you know, it helps all of us, whether you're the art director or the actors. It's really helpful.
Well, my daughter goes to school up there, to college, at St. Lawrence.
Yep.
And so I'm wondering if you got to try the most traditional of all food items up there. They do the pizza bag. The what do they call it? Is it a feed bag or
I didn't get to try it.
But did you hear about it when you were up there?
No.
Well, being a North Shore guy,
yeah.
We had a lobster roll competition in here.
Yes.
Over the summer, and we had like Woodman's in here.
Yeah.
What's your best memory? Best seafood on the North Shore? Best clam shack?
Well, I sort of have to give a shout out to the Village Restaurant because whenever I go home, it's the one that's been there. The Woodman's has been there forever, and I definitely give them a shout out as well. But just, I remember going to the Village with my father and mother when I was, young, and it's just been part of a tradition in our lives forever. So I like going back there. My first job was washing dishes at the Ship Ahoy on the causeway there. And my first night was 4th of July night.
Oh,
and
man.
That was a hard way to break into washing dishes.
Yeah, right, eh?
A texter would like to know how Shia LaBeouf was to work with.
Well, I worked with Shia pre-Transformer movies, and I think that whole Transformer experience transformed him. Yeah. I think that was rough on him.
Yeah.
When we did Disturbia, he just worked his butt off. He had a tough early life. He had to take care of his mother from a young age. His father, I guess, was a drug addict or something, and he went to work as a young kid, and it really was to support he and his mother. So he had a real work ethic, and I appreciated how hard he worked on that movie. And then he became the superstar, and it really messed with him, I think.
Well, I feel like your character, I can't decide whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, and I suppose that's a part of it.
Well, I have to say, the character established himself early on when he spit in that guy's face that kept bothering
him. Spoiler alert.
Oh, it was the first episode, right? Yeah. Come on. he seemed like this, this is one of those COs that really cares and whatever, and then that kid wouldn't stop talking. Yeah. He just spit right in his face. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the kid was annoying, for crying out loud.
Well, it's fantastic television, and I really appreciate you coming on to talk a little bit about it. And what do we have, 3 episodes left? Are we 5?
Yeah, 3 left. You'll see that the last episode, originally it was going to be, it was originally going to be 2 episodes, but Ben, he really felt it was more of a movie, and so I think that last one is a 2-hour special.
Really?
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it happened in real life the way it happens on the show with the getting out part with the pipe, and I don't want to give too much away, but that's the way they did it through that pipe and everything.
Oh my gosh, it is unbelievable when you see the real thing. What you're going to see when they actually do the escape.
Yeah.
But it took months and months, but to actually get through that pipe, get into the pipe, and get out of the pipe, you can't believe that human beings did this.
Yeah.
One human being really was responsible for it.
And where are those guys? Aren't in the same prison now, the actual guys, right? Are they somewhere? Are they somewhere else?
No, one of them just gets moved everywhere. Every couple of months he's moved somewhere else. It's gonna be for the rest of his life. He escaped. They're gonna make his life hell forever.
Oh,
and one final question before you go, because everybody's texting in. How was the great Tom Hanks to work with on the Green Mile?
Well, I don't think anybody would be disappointed. The great Tom Hanks is the great Tom Hanks, and part of what makes him so great is obviously his acting, but him as a human being is what really, really fills him out and makes him as great as he is. One thing is he really likes to have fun, but he also really likes to take care of people. And it's a great combination.
I knew you were going to say that.
See, Greg has a hang-up about Tom Hanks. We don't know why.
I don't know.
I mean, the guy's a great actor, but Greg, I think it's jealousy, David.
I mean, no person can be that great. That's just the way I feel about it, David. I mean,
I'm not going to tell you about the bad things.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming on, and best wishes for the holidays. And it's nice to see a fellow Commonwealth of Massachusetts person doing great. And you really, you've had an amazing career. You're one of those guys who people will probably say this to you, but It seems like when we talk to you and look at what you've done, you've been in everything. You're like in everything.
I've not been in actually everything.
Maybe
you
have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe like 82%.
All right, David, thank you.
Well, thank you. Happy holidays to all of you.
Okay. You too, David.
All right. David Morse, who plays the corrections officer, one of several, but he's really the main character in Escape at Dannemora.
David Morse is one of those guys where you're like, who? And then you look him up, you're like, oh, that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's
was
one
in,
of those guys.
He was a lot of television roles, a lot of film roles. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he really... really has made an amazing career for himself.
Zepic.
So, all right, Escape at Dannemora. It is on Showtime, and I've told you, I've given you enough notice that you should be watching it. So you're behind that. It's a good thing to binge over the holiday break if you're getting some time off.
Yeah,
we are doing our show tomorrow from Bach Maserati. It's our annual Toys for Tots live broadcast. And the marvelous Natalie Jolly with one L will be live and performing some great Christmas music. Ken Casey from Dropkick Murphys will be there with us tomorrow. Santa Bach will be there gifting you with all kinds, not re-gifting, but gifting.
Yes, straight gifting.
And so I hope you come out tomorrow from 6 to 10 at Bach Maserati. You know who we have learned this morning? Is a serial re-gifter. The president. Apparently, apparently the president of the United States is a serial re-gifter. And in the case of his son, it has to do with the fact that certain types of gifts are given to the president, which can then be re-gifted for a certain reason. And Don Jr. talked about that yesterday.
Well, you know, I'm the namesake, so I got re-gifted all of the things that were monogrammed for him at times. So, you know, there was one Christmas where he may or may not have given me the gift that I had given him the year before because I monogrammed it, and it was like, oh, yeah, here, like, I'm like, I know you didn't get this. How do you know that? Because I gave it to you last year.
That's outstanding.
That is not surprising.
How do you feel about re-gifting?
Is automatic. Is it
okay if the intention is good?
As long as they don't know.
It's not surprising that you're a re-gifter.
No. When we talked about this before. When I played for the Bruins, Reebok and Nike and CCM would send you everything.
And then you would re-gift that to others.
You would just repackage it.
I don't really call that a re-gift, though.
No.
Because that's promotional stuff that they're sending you. It's more like you know, Annie got you a bread maker, and you were like, hell dog, I got something for Jensky. I'm going to put this in the office.
By the way, best thing ever, the bread maker, homemade bread maker.
I mean, I think it's an issue when people find out. If the person never finds out, it's not an issue.
If you're going to re-gift, you have to keep track.
Yeah. Today's show is presented by EchoStore Technologies, your data center solutions provider. For more information, you can go to echostore.com. Coming up next, it is well documented that I am obsessed by true crime, and we will be joined by one of the hosts of the Small Town Murder podcast. If you're not listening to that, you should be if you're like me and you're a true crime hardo. So we'll talk about that coming up next.